Welcome to What CEOs Want to Know, short conversations that can make a lasting difference for you and your business. My name is Linda Ruland, founder of SuccessAuthorities.com and the producer of this podcast series. In this episode, Success Authority Peter Beaumont gives real-world examples of effective branding's influence on business growth, sustainability, and competitive immunity. He also discusses the crucial elements of effective branding.
Does a brand have any influence over a company's ability to remain immune against its competition?
Yes, a brand does have such an influence. But I would tend to say that it depends whether that's a short or a long-term influence. So one of the things that we have found when talking about a brand's influence is that it's often competitive advantage versus immunity. Immunity being something much more long-term, something that we'll talk about a bit more later, I think, is it's more strategic rather than tactical. So we have to be careful when we talk about a brand influence as to whether we're looking at it from the long-term or short-term basis. In answer to your question, the short answer is probably yes, it does have an influence over a company's immunity, but it needs to do a lot more than just have an edge around, say, for example, features and benefits, which is much more of a competitive advantage rather than something that's long-term, which will keep the moat, as Warren Buffett said, around you to secure your profits.
You're saying that a brand typically focuses on the benefits, let's just say motivations behind purchasing behavior, and therefore usually has more of a competitive advantage rather than a ability to be strongly immune against competition.
That's a good summary. Yeah.
Okay. So is a brand important more or less during times of rapid change like we're going through right now?
The rapidly changing times can be folded into so many things right now with the recent situation vis-a-vis Russia and Ukraine and what impact that may have on supply chain, or worse situation than COVID's caused. We've got COVID, of course. And then we've got the digital age, which is changing the way that people shop, research, and buy their products. And so I think in many ways we've commoditized the way that we buy things. So Amazon being a prime example, a lot of brands on Amazon, but much more promoted now by either Amazon's latest offer, which offers them more profit. So they will push that brand out at you digitally, being able to shop at grocery stores and pick it up, shop online, but pick it up yourself rather than actually going into the store. So good brands stand out and people remember that those are the brands rather than say private label or something that Amazon's pushing because it makes more profit. People will, if the brand's built itself in the to be that much more better, special and different to the potential consumer, and by the way I'd extend that out into services too, then you stand a much better chance of being purchased than you would if you've not built yourself up properly. So, yeah, I think it is a factor. We all read about bricks and mortar going away. It's not going away. It's just the ones that haven't done a very good job are going away. Bricks and mortar will still be around. People still like that experience. So people still like reading paperbacks or hardbacks. Not everybody's switched to the Kindle or reading digitally. There's a reason for that. And so there'll still be a place for it. But I think brands that have done a really good job and need to continue to do a really good job have got even more competition because the channels of purchase and of distribution have changed dramatically.
Sometimes I hear business people talk about not wanting to advertise in print anymore. They bought into the idea that print is dead. And other times I hear that same story about websites, that websites have gone by the wayside because Facebook and other social media pages that they seem to feel replace that kind of presence. What's your opinion on that? Is search engine marketing, again, the ability for something larger in terms of an online shopping app or a search engine, a replacement for what they were doing independently?
There's a bigger range of media open to us to reach our target markets than they used to be. But I think, as with everything in life, it's all about balance. So in my view, depending on the product, some people have given up on their websites and not developed them, whereas in fact, it's probably the strongest vehicle if to think about it. What they should be perhaps doing is driving the traffic through social media back to their website. Because guess what? They control their own website. They control the content. They can control the call to action. So if they're doing a good job, I would encourage, and it, again, it depends on what you're selling. With a service where it's a lot more difficult to get across what you're doing rather than just a product image, you know, refreshing drink. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. But if you're trying to offer wealth management, the smiley face and I can bring you money probably doesn't work so effectively. So you have to spend a bit more time and real estate on demonstrating how you can help. And the way to do that really is to encourage people through lead magnets or content that they can only get from your website and drive traffic to your website. So I would argue that it really depends on what you're selling and where you're positioning and what your target market is. And most people forget, they kind of, social media can be like throwing mud at the wall and hoping somebody will stick. Social media is now starting to develop into niche markets where you know, Pinterest, Instagram, LinkedIn, that you can be a lot more specific now about some of, I'm working with a client now who's trying to reach designers. And we've found out that designers, for some reason, use Instagram. We're now doing a lot more posting and content on Instagram, but guess what? To drive them back to our website.
You mentioned the difference between competitive advantage and competitive immunity, that's creating products that you can sell versus products and services that people want to buy. Can you elaborate on this, and what's the key difference between that?
So, yeah, I think the simplest way to explain that is, this is multifaceted in many ways, but to start with the simple and then probably go down a couple of layers, is like presenting yourself, what used to be called elevator pitches or, you know, value propositions. We tend to tell people, and the way that we market products is no different, is we tend to tell people what we can do or what we're good at. And this is what I do. I'm a lawyer, you know, buy me. And we tend to do the same thing with products. What we need to think about with any brand, and whether that's yourself as a brand or as a product or a service, is what do people need? What's the satisfaction of the need? And those tend to be what I mentioned earlier, which is features and benefits. But the real trick in positioning and getting people to really want your product is, what's the want? What's the icing on the cake? What is it they really want on top of a need? So a need is very functional. A want is to make them really go a bit further. And it's a bit like saying, what problem am I solving? Simon Sinek, well known by many, started the Golden Circle. I think back in 2017, he started talking about the Golden Circle and the why. And the way he used to explain that is, the middle of the circle is the why, and it goes out, it ripples out into how, and then the what. And I believe he used Apple as an example, where he talked about, most people start from, this is what they do, and how is how they do it. And then very few people talk about the why. And so he uses that, as I said, that Apple example, where he talks about, if you were starting from the outside of the circle and working in, you would say, hey, I'm Apple. We make great computers. They're beautifully designed and easy to use. Want to buy one? Now, that's reasonably powerful, but not nearly as powerful as saying, perhaps, starting with the why, which is the purpose, cause, or passion, which would be, we at Apple think differently. We think differently about everything. As a result, we design beautiful things that are easy to use. And by the way, we make great computers. Do you want to buy one? So it reverses the way that everybody thinks and talks about things. And so as a result of that, we've got people like Don Miller, who came along and talked about the brand story, where he's reversed it too and says, what's the problem that you're solving? What is the solution to that? And then what are the benefits? To answer your question, competitive immunity does that. Competitive advantage simply talks about the functional needs. So I'll give you another example. Safety would be one, where customers are concerned with safety, and you could come up with a product which would be a home alarm system, and you could discuss all the bells and whistles of the product, and it's the greatest piece of tech, and it'll do all the sort of things you want it to. But it's missing a vital piece, which is, what is it doing to help? It's protecting your valuables. It's protecting the safety of your family. And that's the kind of need plus the want. And that's the problem that you're really solving. So you should lead with the safety of the family and the safety of your valuables, safekeeping, and then talk about the bells and whistles.
Well, I noticed one thing immediately when you started with the why, with Sinek's why, and then followed up beyond in his golden circle analogy, is that as soon as you start talking about why, it makes it easier for me to visualize my own why. And I'm starting to relate. And by the time you get to the what and the how, I've already bonded with you over the why.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. It happens very quickly.
That's good. That's good. That's interesting. Yeah. And so that just goes to prove it does work.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Because it's like telling a story, isn't it?
Yeah. You start to imagine or visualize or put another character in the place of whoever that individual is describing. It's
right.
Very human.
Yeah, absolutely.
We
yeah.
tend to ignore the human factor in it.
We do.
Communications, yeah.
We do. And yet it's people that are buying and the people that are selling, and it's people's the common denominator throughout the whole chain.
Yeah. Oh, it's so easy, isn't it?
<It'd be> right.
We complicate it. So is it true that brands no longer have time to grow? You've mentioned that before, and it's somewhat alarming and disappointing to me when I hear about that. Is it true for small businesses and publicly traded businesses alike?
Let me answer that question. Let me give the rationale why I think that it is an issue, and then we'll come to the small versus large. I don't want to get ahead of it, but I think it's more of a problem with large companies. So therefore, it becomes a problem for small companies that get large. But,
yeah.
But for large companies, it's become a huge issue because the stock market has changed the way that companies are able to build brands. And so the reason that I've been saying this for quite a while now is because of my experience with Coca-Cola, where we're going to make some major changes to innovation, and it was felt by the board to be retrograde and would wipe value off the stock market. So I'll give you an example. Many, many years ago, before Pepsi bought Gatorade, Gatorade was around and it was flourishing, and the Coca-Cola company was going to buy Gatorade. And they did not do so because they were worried about what effect that may have, because it was several multiples above what it should have been technically, but they were buying it for the long term, understanding that sports drinks was going to be a great segment. And they did not buy it, and Pepsi ended up buying it. And then Coca-Cola realized how big that sector was and had to invest and bring their own brand out called Powerade. And it cost them a fortune, probably much, much more than the purchase of Gatorade. Now, the reason I use that example is because that decision was forced by the potential fallout of the stock market. And so the stock market has a huge influence over the strategic planning of companies with really good brands. And so the way that short-term thinking has entered our lives, as Simon, again, quotes Simon Sinek, the infinite game versus the finite game, the finite game being about winning and losing, the infinite game being about just playing the game, staying in the game as long as you can. If you can do that and build a brand, then you'll be successful. But so many companies, Richard Branson's taken most of his 60 companies at some time or another off the public stock market and privatized them again because he didn't want to be told what to do about building his brand, Virgin being one of them. Many companies have taken themselves off the stock market only to return again after they've been able to spend the time building the brand the way they wanted to. And there are companies that like Dell and Panera Bread and Hilton Worldwide, Heinz and Burger King. I mean, all of those brands have been taken off the market because at some stage, and then possibly brought back when they've been able to be in control of their own destiny. So to answer your question, yeah, I think it's true. And there's other factors that play to this, by the way, as well. It's not just the short-term thinking, but I think that's got a lot to do with it. Now, does it affect small businesses versus large businesses? Or does it affect small businesses as much as large businesses? Not so much, because with small businesses, they have much more control. I mean, small businesses are not often on the stock market, so they have much more control over their own destiny. Of course, I think the big factor is when they go public.
What are the crucial elements of effective branding?
is brand positioning is paramount. So what I mean by that is there's five critical elements to effective branding. And probably the first one is brand positioning. And that's because many people come up with a brand or a service, but they don't take the time to think about what that the value proposition is. It is another way of putting what brand positioning is. So what does it stand for? And what are we going to focus on? And whatever that brand positioning is, and you've agreed upon, you have to run it through a filter. So if you're going to start doing line extensions of it, does it fit with that brand positioning? So I'll use Coca-Cola because I used to work for them, and that's why I use them often. Their brand positioning was providing delicious refreshment. Now, if you could start to come out with a chocolate-flavored Coke, that probably wouldn't fit with that definition. So cherry would be okay, or vanilla would be okay, but you can't start deviating off into different types of products. That would be the first thing. Secondly, with the brand promise, you know, what are you promising to solve for people and keeping to that on a regular basis? And then what's the brand personality? Is it fun? Is it serious? Is it something that is life-saving? Is it something that is just something that makes your day go better? But generate that personality around it. And again, whether it's a service or a product. And then what's the brand story? Where have you come from? Where are you going? So people can associate with it. And the last piece, I think, is brand association. So let's say Nike, where we've come to associate top stars with Nike, Tiger Woods with Nike, and whoever else you want to think. But there's a brand association. The swish and the star go together, brand association. So those would be the five critical elements that I would choose to make sure that you've got effective branding.
Does branding have any influence over attracting employees and recruiting and retaining them?
In a market where we are having problems employing people, those companies don't have any problems because they're brands that people want to be associated with. They want to boast that they work for them. People used to ask me about, what's it like working at Coca-Cola? What a great brand. You know, it used to be, for 5 minutes, the star of a dinner party, right? Because people would want to seriously ask, because you work, as soon as you said you work for Coca-Cola, it was like you were a film star for a short time. You've probably noticed it. I don't know if you've ever been to drinks or dinner or with around people who say they work for Google or they work at Apple. There's an immediate attraction. They've all got a story about it, right? Do they really put sugar in Coke? Is the Mexican Coke better than the one here? I mean, right? We've all got 100 stories about that, you know. So is the Mac, the new M1 performance, better than the previous one? Is the operating system, you know, Google, do they really change those blue colors to do the search? You know, I mean, everybody's got questions around those things. You know, I can't think of many. If somebody told me they work for Amazon, I think the only question is, are those warehouses really that big? I mean, that's not really the most attractive. That's not going to attract me to work for Amazon, frankly. And so it's a long way of answering your question, but I think brands have a huge amount of influence on attracting and indeed retention. Because if you feel proud to work for a company, if you go out and people ask you about the company you work for, how proud do you feel that you've A, got the job, and B, you've kept it, and people are attracted by that?
Related to that, is it possible to communicate your leadership through branding? And if so, how would you explain doing that?
Well, I think it is. Some of those companies I just mentioned have done that. Because what they've done is they've taken a focus or a position. Go back to Simon Sinek example. They've used the why to take higher ground about what they do and doing it differently than anybody else. In EOS Traction, they talk about the three uniques, which are, what are the three uniques that you have in your company that makes you stand out? Now, one may be very similar as your competition, two may be a little bit more special, but the third one should really be unique, something that you do that nobody else does. And what happens is, with branding, is if you're not careful, those uniques get eroded. So you've got to constantly make sure you've got at least one of those uniques that are unique. Let's say Uber would be one where they were unique for some time, and then other companies started to step in. So they started changing their positioning to a better app where you could see the driver coming and the number plate and everything else. Stayed well ahead of the pack. That became very unique. They've started, then they've gone one step ahead. People started following that too. So now they're delivering food, and now they've gone even further delivering non-food as well. So their uniques keep, one of those three uniques keeps changing to keep ahead of the market. So yes, that's a way of communicating leadership. I think the three uniques is one of the ways of doing that.
But again, what effects do search engines like Google have on brands? You mentioned something about commodities. Does Google care about brands? And if so, you know, how do we leverage that? Or is it a risk that we have to be wary of?
First of all, when you get into search engine optimization and all the algorithms, you start to get into commoditization. But good brands make sure that they stay ahead of that game. And really what they're doing is building more awareness for their brand by using the algorithms. But I think it's a high risk to rely upon that. Staying ahead of the game on search engine optimization is really tough. And that's why SEO suddenly started moving into ads on pages, right? Because that wasn't enough anymore. The jury's still out on how effective some of these ads are. The pop-ups and the ads, if you go onto Forbes online magazine now, I can't even concentrate on the copy anymore. There's just so much stuff going on. In fact, I avoid going on Forbes now. I think it's been bad for their brand, to be honest, because it's too busy. And I get that you want to advertise and still make this copy free, but there has to be a limit, and I think they've crossed that one. But to answer your question, I think it depends on the brand, it depends what you're looking to do, a bit like what's your target market and how's best to reach them.
What is the most important thing a company can do to establish its brand leadership?
I think the best way I can describe it is making sure that those five crucial elements we talked about are done really effectively, because that to me is the A to Z of good branding. You know, getting your brand positioning right all the way through to brand association. I would say there's two things that underpin those. Once you've got those and you've got your filter for what your brand is all about, is focusing, absolutely relentless focus on those five crucial elements, and don't let anything distract you. And then ensure that you're communicating tirelessly all the time along those five elements. It's a process. And I think sometimes there's a trap with agencies and marketing people to chase the latest silver object and go down that path because that seems more interesting. And particularly that's their creativity coming out. But unfortunately, what you need is the initial input from creativity and agencies so that you get that brand positioning. And then they need to get out of the way and let the process guys follow, reinforce. Because as we all know, the people, I found that at Coca-Cola, when we put commercials together, we would get tired of them years before the consumers had actually cycled through most of them, simply because we saw them day in, day out, and we forget that not everybody else is seeing them day in, day out, which is why we keep seeing the same LinkedIn post very often, because people realize that you may have seen it three or four times, but somebody else is seeing it for the first time. So it's relentless process and follow-up and keeping on track. So those five elements, yeah.
Look forward to future podcasts featuring authorities on topics vital to the success of your business during these changing times. For more information and to contact us directly, visit successauthorities.com.